Many of us have plans for tomorrow, Thanksgiving. We'll get together with families and friends, we'll celebrate and be grateful for what we have. But for many, Thanksgiving is just another day where they struggle to get enough to eat. Welcome to The Full Story. I'm Ron Ropiak, and it truly is one of the best holidays of the year. And what makes it special is that we take the time to be grateful, not for material things, but for our families, our friends, and the lives that we have. But there's a problem in our region, one that often gets underreported or glossed over, and I'm talking about hunger. I mean families and seniors and kids going without food, not starving, but hungry. Or living in areas where they don't have access to healthy food. And that's what we'll be talking about today. It may not be what you want to hear right before Thanksgiving, but I'm asking you to stay with us because we're going to hear from some amazing people who are trying to make a difference. And we're going to start in Stamford, Connecticut. You probably know that parts of Fairfield County are some of the wealthiest in the world. Hunger and access to good, nutritious food should not be an issue in some place like Fairfield County, and that's simply not the case. Kate Lombardo is joining us, the executive director of the Food Bank of Lower Fairfield County. Kate, I'm guessing that this may be your busiest day of the year, and thanks for taking a few minutes with us.
Yeah, it is the busiest day of the year, and it's a pleasure to take time to speak about this issue with you.
Thank you, Kate. Most of us know or we've heard something about the food bank. But for those who don't know, introduce yourself. What do you do?
I'm the executive director of the Food Bank of Lower Fairfield County, which is located in Stamford. And it serves the six surrounding towns, all the way from Greenwich to Stamford to Norwalk, New Canaan, Darien, and Wilton. And those six towns, there's a lot of poverty, and a lot of people are not able to make ends meet. And therefore, they need help and assistance in order to keep just their household afloat and stay fed and not go homeless.
You and I both know that if you're not from this area, and let's say you're a reporter up in Hartford and you were talking about Ned Lamont running for governor, and they would always write Ned Lamont from the wealthy town of Greenwich and Darien and New Canaan, they all have that same reputation. But you're telling me that hunger is a problem in these communities.
Yeah, and it's pure economics. I mean, when you consider wherever you go in the world, you see it in any city. Like, for instance, I stayed at the mansion at Turtle Creek in Dallas, and at night I would just walk around, and you didn't have to walk that far to see the working poor. What are they doing living there in such a beautiful area and elegant area? Well, unfortunately, they're working. They're working two jobs, and they're not commuting back and forth from Appalachia to do it. They live where they work, and that is a fact. I mean, people don't realize that their cleaning lady may be going home to empty shelves. That their gardeners, their pool cleaners, it runs the gamut. The people who are working at fast food restaurants, you don't have to look very far now to see a senior citizen who clearly looks like they should be retired, and enjoying the time of retirement working. And as cashiers, and it breaks your heart because it's right there in front of your face, and yet people will say, oh, my word, there's hunger in Lower Fairfield County? How could that be?
You used a phrase a short time ago, working poor. What is that?
Well, that's working poor is that you earn $10 an hour in a community where it costs $37 an hour to just make ends meet. That means you get to pay your $1,775 a month for a studio apartment. And I'm talking studio. I know this because my son is moving from one. So you get to pay that, and you're earning $10 an hour. Where does that put you? You can't there aren't enough hours in the month to make the rent.
People
are doubling and tripling up and making do and pulling together and, you know, and working two and three jobs just to make ends meet.
I think of the kids. I think of the kids at this time of the year. Do you know what I mean? Because many of them, and this relates to what we're talking about, when they go to school, they love going to school. Well, they want some education. They're going to see their friends. But that's where they get their food. That's where they get their meals.
That is true.
And what happens at this time of the year? The schools are closed. They're on vacation. Kids are going, yay, I'm on vacation. But for some of the kids, they will go hungry.
Over the weekend, yes, they will. Food will become a very, very big commodity, a necessary commodity in the house, because the children will be home for four straight days. The parents may well not be working for those days, so they've lost 4 days' worth of pay because it's a holiday weekend, or they may be working and the children are at home alone. Either way, it puts a strain on the household budget. And the children are at home to, you know, manage for themselves. And it's difficult. These are latchkey children who we encourage the pantries to give out, our pantries to give out more food during holiday weekends and elongated, because that's when the household needs more food in it. Kids eat, and they're not, it's not like back in the day when I was a kid and, you know, we ran around outside and played. Kids are homebound now, and they need the one thing they have. They snack. Kids eat. They eat every day, and it's necessary. And it's not a scientific problem to solve a hunger issue. It just takes food. It doesn't take studies. It just takes food.
How many clients do you have? How many meals and how much food do you distribute?
We distribute 1.2 million pounds of food a year, give or take. It's very, very difficult, because the higher the rents go, especially here in Stamford, the rents are going through the roof. New building is coming in, and people are being pushed out of neighborhoods because of new building. And the rents are going higher, and people are relying more and more on what used to be called emergency food. It's no longer emergency food. It's necessary food for them to make it from the beginning of the month to the end of the month.
Where do you get your donations from?
Well, we're quite fortunate that we get our donations from lots of supermarkets and people who conduct food drives, like schools, Trinity Catholic, and the Stamford Public School System does huge food drives, and people are very generous at this time of year by writing a check or going onto our website at www.foodbanklfc.org and making donations and helping us to buy food. A lot of it we have to buy. And you just go out and you buy, and the agencies take it, and the agency reps shop for their clients. They take it back to the soup kitchen, the shelter, the pantry, whatever feeding program it is, and they distribute it to the individuals.
I just want to give the web address again. It's www.foodbanklfclowerfairfieldcounty.org. So foodbanklfc.org. Can people donate directly? If they had extra food, if they had bags of food, something in the pantry, and they're hearing this, they're saying, wow, can they use this right now? Can they just drive over to your place and drop it off?
Yep, absolutely. We're going, because we're a food bank, we'll be closing up at 2 o'clock today because all of our agencies have the food. But come Monday, remember us, because hunger is a 365-day-a-year issue. You know, it doesn't go away, and it doesn't just happen at Thanksgiving time. So it's, you know, please feel free to drop off. And people will ask, well, what do you need? Well, if you like it on your table, then, and you would feed it to your family, the poor are no different. They'll eat it too.
Kate, has this problem been getting worse the last few years? Have you seen it improving?
I feel it's almost like we're back in the 60s. Back in the 60s, unfortunately, and maybe quite frankly, fortunately, I for a period of time, we, our family, my family, relied on food banks. You know, we had to go to a food bank at the Homestead Projects in Brooklyn, New York. And I would go with my mom, and fortunately, we would get our monthly allocation, and it did make a difference in the household. It made a huge difference. It made stretching the, my mother was able to make the budget, and which she was very good at, and we were able to get through. So when I see it sometimes, I think, my God, it's been so many years, 1960, when Johnson put all of this into effect, and we're still looking at the same issue. We haven't solved it. We haven't solved it. We're just putting Band-Aids on Band-Aids on Band-Aids on Band-Aids.
You sound frustrated?
I am frustrated. It is extremely frustrating to watch it.
We're just about out of time. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. And we'll talk to you soon. And thank you for doing what you're doing.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Joining us on The Full Story is Dr. Jessica Rosati, the Chief Program Officer of Long Island Cares. It's a food bank which assists residents of Nassau and Suffolk counties. Dr. Rosati, thank you for joining us today. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
It's our pleasure. How many people does Long Island Cares assist?
So Long Island Cares is a regional food bank for Long Island. So primarily what we do is provide emergency food to residents of Nassau and Suffolk County through our member agency network. So those are your local food pantries, soup kitchens, sheltered programs, and then we operate some of our own direct service programs. We estimate that there's about 272,000 people who are food insecure living on Long Island. And of that number, we pretty much believe about 90,000 are children. So through our network of agencies and through our own direct service programs, we're meeting that need.
That's a staggering number, and it's also heartbreaking to hear.
It is. You know, Long Island Cares was founded 38 years ago by the late and great Harry Chapin. And Harry Chapin started our organization out of a van in his hometown of Huntington on Long Island because he saw a need. He saw people struggling to put food on their tables. So one man with one vision sought out to try to meet that need. And when he founded our organization, he thought by now we'd be out of business and that there wouldn't be food insecurity. But unfortunately, that's not true. And 38 years later, you know, I can confidently say that nobody is starving on Long Island, but we certainly have a tremendous amount of families that are struggling to sustain independently and give their families access to nutritious and secured food sources. And that's where the regional food bank comes in, to help supplement that need by making sure people do have access to nutritious foods so they can feed their families and keep themselves healthy.
I have heard the description working poor that has been used to describe some of your clients. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the demographic of Long Island, it's very affluent. And, you know, that's great. You know, we have these beautiful shorelines with beautiful homes and, you know, an average median income of, you know, over $80,000, which is wonderful. But our cost of living here on the island, which many, you know, which is commonly seen throughout the tri-state area, you know, people are struggling to meet their daily needs. So you find more so and more so that the people coming and utilizing the food network, coming to pantries, coming to soup kitchens, you know, coming to utilize direct service programs are often the working poor. So what that is really are people that are working, but their working is not providing them with the basic means to support themselves. So perhaps they're underemployed, or perhaps the cost of living outweighs their wages. So it's a, you know, I think a term that's, you know, a little bit more commonly known within poverty, and something that people should really take a close look at, because unless you're addressing, you know, the root causes of poverty, how do you help people get out of it?
Dr. Rosati, some people might find this angle slightly strange, but our producer, Ann Lopez, pointed this out to me, that a number of college students go hungry nowadays because people are saying, well, if you go to college, you have to have money, obviously, to go to college. But it's so expensive that the college students, many of them, the high cost of tuition, paying rent, right, other costs, they can't afford to eat.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is a very true statement. There's about 34 higher educational institutions throughout Long Island. That's private and SUNY. And among them, there's been a very huge push, and we've been working very closely within New York State to try to set up each college with their own community food pantry. And I'll explain why. You know, the majority of the students that go to colleges, especially on Long Island, they're commuter students. So these are folks that may not be living on site on the campuses themselves. So they're traveling back and forth. You know, college, good, bad, or indifferent, is very expensive. I mean, I have my doctorate. If you've got the number of how much money I owe New York State, you know, as someone that has a PhD, you know, it's a staggering number. So unfortunately, you have a huge network of college students that are trying to better themselves, trying to earn better education so they can get better paying jobs. But through that whole process, they're struggling. And a lot of times are making those hard choices of, you know, do I buy my books or do I buy lunch? Do I, you know, continue to pay for this class or do I pay my rent? You know, and unfortunately, there's a big, perhaps a disparity among how much things are costing compared to, you know, how we can better ourselves so we can afford those things. So it's something that I think New York State has taken a very close interest in, Long Island especially, and we've been very helpful, I hope, and very nurturing of our local community colleges in meeting with people and training them and educating them and helping them put the mechanisms in place to help their students a little bit better.
Dr. Rosati,
I think you'll start to see more of it.
We only have 30 seconds left. If someone wants to help you help others, how can they do so?
Bring awareness and donate. You know, there's a lot of wonderful holidays coming up, and I think people resonate with holidays and giving back to others. Donate to your local food bank. Donate to your local food pantry. Give your time, give your energy, and bring your awareness. And if you have it, give some money.
Dr. Jessica Rosati, the Chief Program Officer of Long Island Cares. Dr. Rosati, thank you for your time and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much. You guys too.
And joining us on the line now is Janine Logan. Janine is Director of the Long Island Health Collaborative. Janine, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well.
Thanks for spending a few minutes with us today. I know it's very busy for everyone. I saw a figure, because we were just talking about the working poor, and right, I saw a figure earlier today, which the estimate is around here, New York, Long Island, a family of four needs to make about $71,000 a year to avoid being food insecure. Would you agree with that number?
Yeah, I certainly would agree with that number. I know the federal government sets federal poverty guideline figures, and it's often not at all sufficient for those who live and work on Long Island because of our high cost of living here.
How do we fix this problem? I know it's the $6 billion question here, and it's a simple question, but how do we fix this? We've been dealing with this for decades.
Yeah, I don't know that there's I have any magic bullet or magic formula, but as the individual you were just speaking to mentioned, that we need to raise awareness, I guess, about the problem of hunger on Long Island. There are many individuals who perhaps might qualify for SNAP benefits, you know, supplemental nutrition program, but are not aware of it. maybe there's still stigma attached to that. So I think that we need to raise awareness about all of those programs, support program like that, programs that Long Island Cares has available in terms of their food pantries and the other organizations that are working on Long Island to decrease hunger. And they're all out there doing great work and the best job they can, but it's very labor intensive. It's hard to get into communities where there is hunger existing to get to those individuals so that they know where they can go for help. And that's one of the things that we try to do here at the Long Island Health Collaborative is to raise awareness about all of those organizations working together to reduce hunger.
What's more important, or is there any difference? If someone says, I'm hearing this and I want to donate, do you need the money? Do you need the food? Do you need the time?
You know, we're not an organization that accepts any donations or doles out any foods. We're more of an organization that convenes partners working in the space of food insecurity, housing, transportation needs.
I'm sorry, I just meant generally.
Generally, I think all of the above are needed. Always donations, both monetary donations, food donations, people who are willing to get out there and work at the local food pantries. Obviously, tomorrow there, I'm sure there are going to be many, many individuals who are volunteering their time to serve a nice Thanksgiving meal to those who might be homeless or who can't afford to put a meal like that on the table. So it's all of those. We need all of that.
Is there enough collaboration taking place nowadays on the island?
Absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of collaboration. There are organizations doing fantastic work in so many areas regarding food access and nutrition.
I guess some people are listening to this right now. They may be driving in their cars. And just so you know, we're recording this. We're live at 1 o'clock, but then we play back our broadcast at 7 o'clock. So many of our listeners are in their cars at that time. And I'm sure today, being what it is, there probably will be more people on the road. And I'm wondering if some are thinking right now, this can't be, these numbers can't be accurate in our area simply because of the extreme wealth that exists around here in certain communities.
Yes, there is extreme wealth, but there are also pockets of extreme poverty as well. And we are very, as a society, we often don't want to acknowledge that. But there are many, many households, many elderly, many adults, many children living in poverty right here on Long Island. And many as are working poor as well. So they do work and they do have some income, which oftentimes pushes them right over those threshold levels that enable them to qualify for some assistance programs. But it is shocking that on Long Island that is so affluent in so many areas that we still do have this problem.
And are food deserts a huge problem on Long Island?
We do have food deserts, and they are a problem, but we also do have what's called food swamps. And food swamps are areas where there are many choices for fast food purchases as opposed to purchases for fresh fruits and vegetables, the healthier and more nutritious foods. So we have both food deserts and we have food swamps.
So that means when you're driving down the road and you see a McDonald's next to a Burger King, next to a Wendy's, and so on. You're talking about something like that?
Yes, I am. And if you think about the issue of poverty, and perhaps as an example, maybe a working mom, single working mom of a few children, and she has trouble making ends meet, but she's holding it together. What's going to be more fulfilling in terms of her children's hunger needs than being able to purchase a fast food meal that costs a few dollars as opposed to having to spend four times that amount of money to put a nutritious meal on the table? And of course, the matter of convenience and the matter of time pressures that she faces. So it's very enticing and it's very easy to fall into those kind of habits. And it's not to say that that's the wrong thing to do because you need to feed your children, but there's that always that temptation, and the more fast food restaurants and opportunities to purchase not as nutritious foods as we would like, the more that they exist, the more likely individuals will utilize those.
I think we've all been in that trap. You're tired, mm-hmm. moments of weakness, and you just want to have something to eat, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in that trap myself.
So it's very easy
to pull into a fast food restaurant and pull up to a window and order food.
Yes, it is, and that's when they got you, right?
mm-hmm. Yes.
What can people do? It sounds like, besides, obviously, you're collaborating with many of the other agencies out on the island, but you're talking about education, you're talking about funding, you're talking about more awareness, a little bit of everything, it seems.
Yes, it's a little bit of everything. What we're trying to do here at the Long Island Health Collaborative, and we're a voluntary coalition of all of the hospitals on Long Island, the two county health departments, dozens of community-based organizations, just including many that are food pantries and food service organizations, academic institutions, the libraries, some businesses, medical societies. We're all working together voluntarily as a coalition to have a greater impact on issues that affect health, the health outcomes of individuals, and one being access to nutritious food access. Because we know that if you're not eating properly, particularly if you have a chronic disease, that your health outcome will not be as good as it could be. So that's an important component of what we do.
Especially nowadays, as we all struggle with healthcare affordability, mm-hmm. you just need to take care of yourself now so you don't have those big doctor bills in the future, either for you or your children.
Right. So according to the Centers for Disease Control, one in every two adults suffers from some chronic disease, whether it's diabetes or whether it's asthma or cardiovascular disease. And there has been much research to determine that 70% of an individual's health outcome is tied to the social determinants of health, which include their access to food, their access to transportation, their access to affordable health insurance, and so on and so forth. So we can do certainly a better job of taking care of our population and our communities by ensuring that good, nutritious food is available for everyone all the time at an affordable price. That's just one of the ways that we can chip away at that rate of chronic disease that's so prevalent in the United States, and that really costs the healthcare system a tremendous amount of money. And these are preventable conditions, right? So if you eat right and properly exercise, you can perhaps prevent type 2 diabetes. You can perhaps lower your high blood pressure, and so on and so forth.
One last question before we have to go. Have you mm-hmm. seen the situation get worse the last few years? Or improve?
The situation of chronic disease? Which situation?
It sounds like across the board that hunger and chronic disease and everything seems to be getting worse. And I had thought that by now it would be getting better.
Well, there's all kinds of studies, right? And all different groups do their own studies. But we here at the Long Island Health Collaborative, we collect a lot of very localized data. And we go out into the communities and working with our partners, ask community members, what are the barriers to accessing care? What are their most prevalent health concerns? Are they exercising? Do they have access to quality, nutritious food? And we've done our own analyses with that primary data and also looked at some secondary data sets as well. And we've determined, it's quite good news, that the activity levels have increased a little bit among Long Islanders, and we're doing a little bit better in terms of eating our fruits, but not so much with our vegetables. So on a very local level, there's very, very small, hopeful, progressive change. So that's good.
That is good news. Janine Logan is director of the Long Island Health Collaborative. Janine, thank you for your time. I wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
And same to you.
Thank you. We've talked to some amazing people today, amazing groups, and I have another one to tell you about. If you're not from this area, you may not know about them, so we're going to back it up to the beginning, and we're going to bring in Amelia Reese Masterson. She's the executive director of City Seed. Amelia, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And just so I'm going to set the stage for people, I am pretty sure that your meal tomorrow is going to be extremely healthy, very nutritious, and locally sourced. Am I right?
Yeah, I hope so. We definitely have lots of amazing food to choose from at our farmers market. So
tell us about City Seed.
Sure. Yeah. So I direct a nonprofit called City Seed, and we have operated for the past 15 years in New Haven. We aim to build a more equitable local food system in New Haven and also support farm viability across the state of Connecticut. So we run farmers markets, we run cooking education, we run food business incubation and services for new food businesses. And we work a lot on food access and making fresh and healthy food more affordable and more accessible in our city.
So 15 years ago, you took a look around, you and some friends of yours, you took a look around and said there's a need for this?
Yeah, so the founding director, Jennifer McTiernan, and a group of neighbors got together and just realized that there was no way to actually access local vegetables in New Haven, so vegetables grown in the state of Connecticut. And so they launched out with the farmers markets. The Worcester Square Farmers Market is our first one to open. It's sort of our flagship market. But since then, we've really grown, and we have five farmers markets. We also have a commercial kitchen, and we work with 45 chefs who are refugees and immigrants to share their cuisine through cooking classes and through catering. We work with a network of over 60 vendors, all from Connecticut, food producers and farmers. And then we also work with about 15 new food ventures each year to provide support and hopefully get their products into the markets and other places.
So how do we get you to open up some offices and farmers markets in Stamford and Hartford across Long Island? I mean, it's about time that you spread your wings.
Oh, well, thank you. No, we have.
We need
provided,
you.
Thank you. No, we've provided, training for folks across the state, especially on how to redeem SNAP or food stamps at the markets or at farmers markets. So we were the first farmers market in the state of Connecticut to start redeeming SNAP at the market, and now we double the value of SNAP at all of our markets. So that's something we've often outsourced knowledge about, just to encourage others to do the same.
How many people actually show up to your farmers markets?
Yeah, so it's about 60,000 visits per year.
Give me that number again.
About 60,000 visits per year.
That's incredible.
We track visits across our markets. Yeah. And we see a pretty strong showing from SNAP recipients as well. So we have, like I said, we double the value of SNAP for those on food stamps to receive fruits and vegetables in a double the amount that they actually come to the market with. So that's one program that makes our markets more accessible. We also offer coupons for seniors for the farmers markets, for WIC recipients, so mothers with young children, and then a number of other programs. We've partnered with clinics before to make fresh food available to patients at risk of chronic disease through a fruit and vegetable prescription program.
Are food deserts a huge problem in New Haven as they might be in other places such as, let's say, Hartford or Bridgeport?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there are definitely pockets and neighborhoods in New Haven that don't have easy access to fresh fruits and vegetables. And so that's a gap that we've been trying to fill. I mean, it's really a structural issue. Food access really is a structural issue, and poverty is at the heart of it, and also just actual structures in the neighborhood. So things like mobility and transportation, lack of time to get to the supermarket, which might require walking across town.
So that is a major issue also in the greater New Haven area.
And then did you say before that you have the mobile market?
Yes. Yeah, we do have a mobile market, which we partner with Common Ground High School to run. And so that the purpose of that is to go to those neighborhoods that don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables readily.
How many kids, how many youth actually participate in what you do? Because I'm guessing that in your board meetings and when those who are concerned gather around, you're probably aiming at a younger market to try and teach them good habits from the very beginning, so that way they may not have the health issues as they get older.
Yeah, so like I said, Common Ground High School, a local high school here in New Haven that supports a lot of environmental work, healthy food access, partners with us. And we, through the Green Jobs Corps program and the Youth at Work program, we're actually able to have youth come work at our farmers markets and also help run the mobile market. So I think that's pretty in-depth learning about, food insecurity, the value of accessing healthy, culturally appropriate food. And I think those kids do become ambassadors for this in their own neighborhoods. That is an important piece of what we do, as well as kids' education at the market. So we've run before a Power of Produce program, which educates children on the value of local food, fresh food, healthy food, and also just teaches them about the food system.
Are you seeing the kids enthusiastic about this? Because admittedly, well, I'm thinking back when I was a kid, but I mean, at that time you were going down to the pizza place or the burger joint and so on. Are you seeing a more active participation in healthy eating from the youngsters nowadays?
Yeah, I'd say when kids have the opportunity, they do go for fresh fruits and vegetables. So one thing the Power of Produce program does, and I'm hoping we get it funded again for next year, is it gives kids actually like these wooden market coins that they can go spend at the market on fruits and vegetables. And yeah, I'm always surprised that kids will pick out, not just a normal apple or something, but go for unique vegetables and then want to go home and figure out how to use them. So, yeah, I would say I hope that there's a generational shift in that way.
So do I. Hey, I think about it in terms of mental health also, because I love to garden. I didn't get a chance to do it this past summer, just got too busy. But when you do it and you grow something, it not only tastes great, but the feeling that you get when you're actually getting the veggies or you're picking the basil and doing all the rest of these things, it feels great, doesn't it? And I've seen kids do this, and the kids love it.
Yeah, I think, growing, producing your own food, seeing it really go from seed to your table is a good experience for people to understand where food comes from. And that's something our work is not around growing, but we do a lot of education around that for kids. And then our partner organizations, New Haven Farms and New Haven Land Trust, do engage in urban gardening and supporting community gardens around New Haven. I think it really is important, like you said, mental health, but also just understanding of where food comes from.
I was being funny before when I said, can we get you down to Stamford? Can we get you to Bridgeport, to Hartford, and all these other places? But have you talked with others about possibly expanding the program, or at least giving them advice as to how to start a city seed in their areas?
Yeah, I mean, we're always happy to provide advice for folks who'd like to launch either a farmer's market or a new food business. And one thing we're doing actually that is a statewide service is offering a food business accelerator. So we have 15 new ventures this year that are going through that and learning about just business skills, food safety certification, all the licensing and legal things you need to know to start a food business. And we do have participants from Bridgeport and from other towns around Connecticut who come up for that. And I'm hoping that they'll take that knowledge back and launch those businesses in their own communities. That is definitely a statewide service.
Is this something that is that they have to pay for? Is this offered for free? Is it a state organization? How does this work?
No, yeah, it is a free program that CityC launched, piloted last year, and is launching full scale this year. And it's something you apply for. We had almost 50 applicants this past year, and we're able to accept 15. And it's, you know, the goal is to remove barriers to food entrepreneurship and to create links between new food entrepreneurs and farmers and producers. And then just get new food entrepreneurs into farmers markets. So whether that's New Haven or elsewhere. But yeah, it is a 10-week program. It's free. It actually comes with some seed funding for the entrepreneur. So I think I hope that it helps change the landscape in food entrepreneurship as well.
Could you give us the information now, and I'll repeat it before we finish up in about 5 minutes. So if someone wants to contact you about this, how would they do that?
Yeah, you can go to our website. It's cityseed.org, and all the information is there. If you're interested in becoming a vendor in the market, if you have a concept for a food business and need support, if you are a refugee or immigrant with a culinary background and want to get involved in our Sanctuary Kitchen program, all of that's on our website. So I think that's the best way to find the right contact info.
While we have, as I said, about 5 minutes left, tell me a little bit about Sanctuary Kitchen.
Yeah, so Sanctuary Kitchen is one of our newer programs, and we launched in 2017 to support intercultural exchange through food and also livelihoods, so creating opportunities for income generation for new neighbors in New Haven, so refugees and immigrants who came to this city and have a culinary background or interested in sharing their story through cuisine. And it's been a really fun, successful program with over 45 chefs in it so far.
And what countries are they from?
They are from 11 different countries. So across the Middle East, some from Africa, some from Latin America. Many who came a couple of years ago were Syrian or Afghan. So that's probably the majority, but yeah, like I said, 11 different countries, so all types of cuisines. It's a great place to learn about cuisine and also support these, rising food entrepreneurs and chefs. So we have cooking classes, we have support for them to start food businesses, and then we have supper clubs. So if a community member wants to host, a Syrian dinner in their home and learn more about, what's it like to be a Syrian refugee moving to New Haven. That's something we do as well.
As the person who partially runs this, do you get a chance to sample?
Definitely. Actually, we had a holiday menu for Thanksgiving, so we've got cookies from Syria and desserts from Afghanistan out on the table right now, and I think I'll be taking some home for Thanksgiving. So
What's your favorite?
Oh man. I don't know if you can ask me that question. I'd say, I do love Syrian food. I love a lot of the fresh vegetables that are included and their meze, sort of all the dips, hummus, mutabbal, muhammara. I do like that. I think Afghan cuisine was my newest discovery this year, and it is also tremendous. Dumplings and just interesting rice dishes.
I feel a little silly having a peanut butter sandwich before. It's just so unfair. If you had your holiday wishes coming up, Christmas dreams, how would you see City Seed in a few years from now?
Yeah, I mean, we're aiming to build an equitable local food system. So I think in terms of visioning, I'd love to see more connections be built between new food entrepreneurs, between refugee and immigrant chefs and farmers across Connecticut. So establishing those routes for distribution of fresh food into urban areas, whether it's through the markets, through food entrepreneurs, through our cooking classes or through catering. I just think, we need to be supporting our local farmers. They struggle out there every season and their food is amazing. So we're trying to build routes between the two, and that's a big goal of ours. Also just leveling the playing field. So it's tough. There's definitely, food insecurities disproportionately affect people of color in our city. And I think there's less access to resources to start food businesses. So we're trying to change that.
You know, there are still people, and some that I know, who have never been to a farmer's market. And quite frankly, I don't understand it. And if I could just tell you what happened this past weekend. We went down to our local farmer's market and purchased some beef from a farm, I believe it's just to the east of New Haven. And I cooked it up the other night. And I have to tell you, the quality was just incredible, far surpassing mm-hmm. anything that you would get in any of the supermarkets around here. The quality, the taste. And I know, again, people who just don't spend the time going to farmers markets, and I don't understand it. So how do you convince them that this is something they should do?
Yeah, well, I think it's fun to eat seasonally. The food does taste better when you eat it in season, and it tastes better when it hasn't traveled across the country. So I think, yeah, you're right. Just flavor is a big reason to do it. I would say a lot of people look at farmers markets and they think it's not for them or it might be unaffordable. But actually, if you're buying in season, you know, we put out a little like price comparison chart with some, you know, of the supermarket chains in the area. And often when you buy food in season, it actually is the same rate or less than what's in the supermarket. So another reason to eat seasonally. I would say I enjoyed talking to the farmers and just hearing their enthusiasm for the products that they're bringing to market. You know, Tom Truelove is a meat farmer who brings probably the most amazing breakfast sausage I've ever had to market every week. So just it's fun to go in, maybe not know what you're going to get, and talk to people and learn and then pick out, you know, your list for that week. So those are three good reasons: affordability, flavor, and just learning about your food system and your local farmers.
Amelia, we have about 30 seconds left. If someone wants to get in contact with you, if they would like to donate, if they would like to help, how do they do that?
Yeah, you can go to cityseed.org. We have a donate page there, and we're actually have our annual appeal out right now. So we're trying to raise $50,000 this year to go towards this work, building a more equitable food system in our city and supporting farm viability across the state. So look out for our Giving Tuesday posts on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But all of that can be easily found through our website. So it's cityseed.org.
Amelia Reese Masterson, Executive Director of City Seed. Amelia, I enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for being with us, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks so much.